Okay, we'll call the meeting to order at 9:10 a.m. And Mr. Jordahl is going to be our interim clerk while mine is running the omnibus bill over to the chief clerk. And we do have a quorum present. We do not have minutes from the omnibus bill. Members, we are going to be meeting next week, I believe, for one or two more days, probably one more day. And I don't even know if it'll be Tuesday or Wednesday. We're not sure yet, but we're going to meet at least one more day because we have another bill or two to process, and I think that's going to be the end of us for a committee. But if we have we have any requests for oversight hearings on anything, we can crank back up for that. And I have had a member or two that have been interested. One or two members have expressed interest in the auditor's report on local government lobbying costs. And this committee does have the receipt of that report, as well as the tax committee. The tax committee is marking up their omnibus bill, so if we do have something in terms of an oversight hearing, it'll very likely be a day next week or probably the week after on the local government lobbying report, and just receiving it and going over it with the state auditor. So that's one. That's one item that we may bring up that's separate from a bill. Otherwise, they don't know that there's an enormous one of things to do. We have House File 1344 in front of us. The chair will move that House File 1344 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Westrom, good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. There is a small amendment in the package.
The 829 amendment?
Move that just to get it.
Okay.
And I can tell you quickly what that does.
Okay, the chair will move the 829 amendment. Representative Westrom, if you just give us a brief explanation.
Mr. Chair, all the parties that have been closely following this are fine with it. I've circulated it. If there's any contrary, and I don't think there is because I've talked to most of them, it narrows the scope under this provision. One of the provisions in here is what we call seabed community-based energy development, and the language priorly allowed landowners with transmission lines in a county or contiguous county. This scales it back to just the landowners in the county. The intent is to take this new provision and hopefully not make it too unwieldy by having as it is expansive as it was priorly. The other thing this does is applies to new transmission lines, which is what this bill in general is doing, dealing with new processes for transmission lines and not encompassing all the old transmission lines that have been in place. So there's no problem. If there is, I just ask somebody to come up here and say there's a problem if there is, but I don't believe there is. So.
Does anyone want to say anything about the amendment?
Yeah.
Any members have questions about it?
Yeah.
Okay, the chair will move adoption of the E29 amendment. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted. Representative Westrom, any more amendments that you know of?
No, that's it, Mr. Chair. I will
just give us an explanation of the relevant portions to state government finance,
okay,
if you would.
I believe it's Article 3 of the bill. Dealing with basically the EQB right now has a process that they oversee the siting and routing of parts of transmission lines. The PUC deals with the certificate of need up front when a utility is coming in and making a case for a utility line that needs to be constructed from point A to point B. This bill is helping to streamline the process and moving that siting and routing from the EQB over to the PUC, so the oversight committee or the oversight regulatory authorities that start the process are familiar with it can follow it all the way through. And that transfer, I understand, has a slight fiscal impact to the Department of Administration, which funds and receives assessments to pay for the EQB staff to do this process. I understand the cost is about $60,000 that somehow they have assessed to the utilities to pay for the staff that is supposed to do this, and when they transfer it, the $60,000 has apparently been paying for a little more than just utility transmission line issues, and so there's going to be a slight impact to the department's budget.
Representative Weston, could I have Ms. Roberts just explain the fiscal note in the 7 FTE? It looks like there's an offset, I would guess, from special revenues, so I'll just have her run through that for members real quick.
Okay.
And Mr. Chair, members, there are actually two agencies under this committee's purview that are impacted by this bill. The first is legislature itself, and the LCC has some costs that the Legislative Electric Energy Task Force would be covering for per diem expenses for stakeholder work groups. And those expenses are covered through the task force assessment authority, so it's a net neutral impact to the legislature. But the second impact, as Representative Westrom was just discussing, is the transfer of both funding and positions from the EQB, which is housed in the Department of Administration, to the Public Utilities Commission. And the transfer would be for the EQB's authority and responsibility for power plant siting, transmission line routing, wind energy facility siting, and pipeline routing decisions. So that's equivalent to 7 current positions and then $1.3 million a year from the Special Revenue Fund. And you'll note on page 14, the last page of the fiscal note, under long-term fiscal considerations, the discussion from the Department of Administration, I think they're concerned that they just wanted to raise, it's not a cost that's showing up on the fiscal page of the fiscal note, but is that the EQB has some sharing of administrative costs among all its staff, and so if a portion of the staff and the programs are transferred, the remaining portion is going to have some burden of picking up the rest of those administrative costs.
Members have questions? Representative Kahn?
Looking at this bill, I always get a little nervous when the words efficiency and environmental review get put together, because, you know, they don't necessarily go in the same direction. And I guess I'm interested in what the environmental groups have said about this group. And is the, I mean, I guess in my experience, the EQB is probably no better of a steward of the environment than the PUC, but it was set up, at one time it was a good steward of the environment, and what's, have people just given up, or what's the problem? I mean, in some of these things, we like to have two different agencies doing it, because it means you get two looks at a process instead of just one. I've always said sometimes when a proposal goes through conflict, conflict is sometimes a very good thing, because it sharpens the proposal, and if you have to answer the questions that are raised by a constructive adversarial group, you get a better project. So has everyone signed off on this efficiency, you know, like the Italian trains running on time?
Well, they have, Representative Connell, let Mr. Garvey from the department give you a further explanation on.
Okay.
Mr. Garvey, if you could introduce yourself to us.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Edward Garvey, the Deputy Commissioner at the Department of Commerce for Energy and Telecommunications. You've asked a series of questions, if I may, Representative Connell. The answer to the question is that many people have looked at this idea of transferring the siting authority from the EQB to the Public Utilities Commission. The EQB board had public hearings on this, was on its agenda twice, and on its second agenda, it voted without dissent to approve this kind of transfer. Second, if you look on page 20 and then again on 21, page 20, lines 22 and 23, it says the commissioner of the Department of Commerce shall prepare for the commission an environmental impact statement. Again on page 21, the same lines 22 and 23, the commissioner of the Department of Commerce shall prepare for the commission. So what we are preserving is, in many respects, is exactly the two agency check that I think that you expressed desire to keep, is that it would, the reviews would be done, the work would be done at the Department of Commerce but the commission would be the actual reviewing and approving agency. So you have the two agencies actually deciding that, deciding and going through this process.
Yes, but Chairman, none of those agencies have environmental protection as any part of their goal or mission statement. So you're taking it away from the agency who alleged. Now, maybe all what maybe everyone's collapsed on this because of the they have no faith in the EQB as being a proper protector of the environment. But at least the EQB, if you go look at their mission statement and when they were formed and what they were supposed to do and what they sometimes once did, they're supposed to be a protector of the environment. And neither of those two, Commerce or PUC, they're all into, you know, efficiency and fast development and energy utilization. None of them has any motive for environmental preservation.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee,
Mr. Garvey,
without getting into the point, I think the Department of Commerce does have a significant environmental and energy component to it. The original proposal that was put forward was actually to move the EQB staff from EQB to the Pollution Control Agency because we were actually very sensitive to that, both the appearances of that issue but and the substance of that issue. In the course of the legislative process, stakeholders on all sides of that issue looked at that issue and concluded that it was better to make the staff transfer to the Department of Commerce because, A, they think that we can and do perform adequate environmental review programs, plus that would provide for greater efficiencies in the review process. Because what you have right now is you have a separation of whether you need a facility, be it a power facility, power line, or a new energy generating facility. You have that certificate of need review. The commission says, yeah, we need this. It then goes over to the environmental review agency at the board. And they say, well, what are the environmental effects of this? People come in and sort of say, now, and where does it go? And then they say, well, people come out and say, well, we don't really need this, because if we'd known it was going to go there, we would have raised issues. The board, the EQB board said, well, I'm sorry, the need determination has already been made by the commission. We can't make the question of do we need this facility or not. We can only figure out the environmental effects issue. So the conclusion was that that doesn't work very well, that separation. If you unite these at the single decision-making entity at the commission, you can actually have all the parties arguing at the same time, both in the certificate of need and the locational question, the siting, about the environmental effects and the environmental review. And that's when the parties sort of concluded this is a superior process than what we have now, and that's why at the end of your day that the parties have signed off and agreed that this is a very good way of approaching this, that the environmental review components are preserved, if not enhanced. The decision-making is preserved, if not enhanced. That the community and citizen input process is certainly enhanced and improved in this process that we're proposing today.
Except, Mr. Chairman, the philosophy of doing them separately it wasn't an accident. It was done as a specific philosophy that it was appropriate to look at, do you need this, and then so that you don't get into NIMBY issues or anything like that, and then you get into, and it isn't right to argue the need based on location. I mean, you argue the environmental effects based on location. I understand everything you're saying about efficiency, but I'm just going back to when this process was initiated, and the idea of separation was a strong philosophy that you should first determine need, and if you don't need it, then you don't go any further, and you don't, obviously I'm just coming into this discussion at this time, so a lot longer, but I'm just surprised that no one has raised those basic philosophies which were in place when the system was set up.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, if a facility is not needed, there would not be subsequent environmental review unless the applicant applied in parallel. Under the current situation, or under the proposed situation. What we're asking for is that you have these two parallel processes be done, but have a same decision maker make both. I mean, that's actually what we're sort of asking, that these decisions are integrally linked. Whether you need it and where it goes are integrally linked. We're not combining the certificate of need and siting and routing. What we're sort of saying is that they can and should be put on parallel tracks and decided by one entity, because you want those decisions, you want to have the stakeholders all being able to say, we don't need this here. We might need it generically, but we don't need it if it goes here. Right now, they can't make those arguments.
Okay. Any other questions on the bill, the fiscal note, etc.? The motion is to pass House File 1344 to the Committee on Ways and Means as amended. Any other questions from members on this?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Krinke.
I just have one question for the author. The word in you have in here that, excuse me, Mr. Westrom, it says that tariff establishment. Can you tell me what the tariff establishment is and who pays the tariff?
Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Krinke, the tariff establishment deals with the seabed that I mentioned earlier, the community-based energy development component of this. And that also, Mr. Chair, members, fits into some of the discussion that Representative Kahn and Mr. Garvey were having. I mean, this whole thing is glued together by pieces that groups and stakeholders, environmental groups, wind, renewable energy advocate developers, the utilities, Chamber of Commerce. This tariff is a new tariff that the Public Utilities Commission would establish that would have a front-loading component to it for seabed projects, community-based energy projects, wind projects that would go up in different parts of the state. And the 2.7 cents tariff is a ceiling on what the PUC can approve as a net present value. They can approve, they're instructed to approve a front-loaded contract, as they call it, where the developers could get paid, and the project owners could negotiate for the first 10 years being paid at a higher price than the last 10 years, but the tariff couldn't exceed a 2.7 cents price, a net present value price over the 20-year period. So that's a very competitive priced form of energy in today's world, and certainly in 20 years, it can even be more competitive at a 2.7 cent net value. So, Representative Krinke, to your second part, who pays? Obviously, the utilities that sign up for this, who need to meet their renewable energy objectives by 2015, are encouraged to try to work with community groups located here in Minnesota to bring also the benefit of those dollars staying local in our communities versus some other state that ships the power in. But the utility companies would pay it ultimately, but they also have the renewable energy objectives to meet. The big part of this is also the instruction to the PUC to create a front-loaded tariff or front-loaded contract where you can get more cash flow to make the project happen and pay back in the first years. So I don't know if that answered your question or not, but Mr. Garvey maybe has some more insight on that as well if you
want. Mr. Chairman, Representative Westrom, I'm just looking for a rather simple explanation. What's the difference between a tariff and a tax?
Mr. Chairman, a tariff, and I'll let Mr. Garvey answer this, but I'll tell you what I think.
A-R-I-S-S.
A tariff is you're buying something that is being delivered to you, a tax that doesn't mean you're getting anything for it necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Oh. I know I don't get anything for what I pay in taxes, President Westrom, but I'm just trying to figure out what I'd get for a tariff.
Well, you'd be able to keep the power on at your business so you can run the computer to pay your employees.
Mr. Garvey. Mr. Garvey, what's your thought on tariffs versus taxes?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Representative Prinky, a tariff is an offering price. In the utility context setting, it's an offering price. What they say is that the utility, subject to the issues on page 13, lines 14 through 33, a utility has to say, if someone wants to build a community-based wind energy project, they would buy the energy at that price. It's a price offering issue. And that makes it a difference than a tax is something that is imposed on everyone, layman's term, as opposed to a duty, which is another form, you know, in international trade. The duties and tariffs are those kinds of things. But I think in, you're asking a question that's actually very detailed and goes back 100 years of utility regulation. It's the billing offering price or their charging price that a utility would propose. They would buy the power at that price.
Representative Khan?
It's not a tap. Let's be
well, Mr. Chairman, it just occurred to me a mistake that we made. We let our bill got out yesterday, but maybe you can do this in ways and maybe Representative Prinky can do this in ways and means. And part of our legislative reform package in our bill, one of the ones was, and I was trying to pull out, Representative Prinky, what's the name of your committee?
The committee which I chair is yes. called the Tax Committee.
Okay, I just think that we should have changed that committee to taxes, tariffs, duties, and fees. Taxes, tariffs, duties, fees, and other revenue enhancers. And I would suggest that you have that language ready for an amendment in Ways and Means.
We title committees in the House of Rules.
But if you recall, if you look at our bill, Mr. Chairman, you'll see that we do a bunch of things in it that we usually do in House Rules. So you could just add this to the list.
That's true.
Mr. Chairman, I've just wondered in thinking about Representative Krinke's question, does he want to, since he has a bill defining a what is it? Fees as a tax? This is even closer to a tax than a fee. So, are you going to pull it into your committee?
I think if you pull out the dictionary, you might find that they. Yes, we have one. We need one.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to know if Representative Westrom wanted to come and visit us in the tax.
Sure, I'm sure he is as anxious to go there as all the other authors. I remember when we used to have GovOps, I'm sure Representative Khan remembers this, and we were sitting in this room, I think, and we'd have members come with their bills, and they were great ideas, and Representative Rhodes would say, why don't we send this to the floor, and then somebody would say, well, no, I think Representative Krinky needs to see this in state government finance. And we passed it unanimously, and it was never to be seen again. But the motion is to go to Ways and Means, and
I might want to change that motion, Mr. Chairman. So, as I said, I'm still waiting, Representative Westrom, for the. My question is, who is specific? So the utility is paying a higher cost in order to. Provide the wind generation. I'm lost on who pays the tariff.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Finke, tariff term goes a long ways back, and it it shouldn't be confused with a tariff that the federal government can impose on imports. That is a different type of tariff. Tariff is synonymous with rates. Really is a closer analogy, I would suggest. Getting back to your question, the consumers of energy pay the rates. Now, 2.7 net present value is lower than some energy being provided, higher than others. Nuclear is near the bottom, coal's near the bottom, and natural gas is higher in many instances. And so, that's the utility's job to kind of blend all their sources together. It's the PUC's job to oversee their monopoly so they aren't unfairly taking profit above and beyond their costs as a utility company. That's why they're a regulated industry. And so it's a rate, Representative Krinke, and 2.7 cents 20 years out is a pretty good rate. But the other thing that is in here or is not in here is this is something that has to be negotiated between utilities and a seabed project owners. Part of the discussion we had along the way was whether the utility should have some sort of onus or requirement to buy local, and that's not in here. So there's that's part of the balance. Many people think this tariff and a front-loaded contract will make it happen, and the utilities will be able to buy it locally for the same price and benefit as if they go to North Dakota or Colorado to buy it. So the ratepayers will pay whatever eventually gets signed up. If any projects come to fruition, the hope is that it will help projects to be able to be financed, spread the wealth in communities with several owners. The utilities, I can assure you, are very shrewd, tough negotiators for the ratepayers as well. The Chamber of Commerce watches them very closely as well, and the PUC has the oversight. And so I don't think anyone's going to get away with an unfair power purchase agreement. And the utilities, if it's far and wide cheaper to go halfway across the country to buy the power and ship it in, that's their prerogative to still do.
I'm just looking up the definition, Representative Westrum, of tariff: a list or system of duties imposed by a government on imported or exported goods, or a duty or duties imposed by a government on imported or exported goods, or any schedule of prices or fees.
It's a tough.
A tax is a contribution for the support of a government required of persons, groups, or businesses within the domain of that government, or a fee or due levied on the members of an organization to meet its expenses, or a burdensome or excessive demand.
New insight and into tariffs, taxes, and fees, Mr. Chairman. Very, very studious of you to come up with that, and I'm not surprised.
But I had the dictionary behind me, where Representative Westrum. Representative Kahn.
Yes. Well, Mr. Chairman, every time you pick up you look at the beginning of Article 2, there were just loads of definitions. Do we define tariff anywhere in the statute? We start out in Subdivision 1 saying a tariff shall be established, but do we define tariff anywhere else that we're missing?
Mr. Garvey or Representative Westrum, my bet is that if you look in 216B of the Minnesota chapter, there's and in for energy, and then in probably 237. In the beginning.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Was the tax that started the revolution, was that a tariff on tea or a tax on tea?
I bet it was
you
a tariff.
You just called it tariff.
Yeah. No, I think
that was an imported good.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's Representative Krinke's call as to whether he wants the bill or not. I'll vote with him if he wants it. But I'm not going to send it there if he doesn't want it.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we can send it to Ways and Means, and I can do some further research on tariffs and find out if it should really come to the tax committee. So. It can always go to taxes after Ways and Means.
But it's also, Mr. Chairman, it's a great new word to deal with this no tax policy.
We'll see if the governor says he's going to sign this bill into law if it becomes law or if it becomes an act passed by the legislature.
Mr. Chair, as far as I know, he will. Mr. Garvey is. Got a closer direct line to the governor's ear, and in fact, he receives several of his instructions from that higher command. And so, I would venture to guess he wouldn't have been working on this bill with our committee for the last 3 months if the governor was planning on vetoing it. So,
I'm trying to remember was there no tariff pledge that was an addendum to that, or
Mr. Chair, if this goes to the tax committee, it essentially every bill coming out of regulated industries will need to visit the tax committee.
Don't give Representative Krinke any ideas, Representative Westrom.
But on the flip side, Mr. Chair, then everything that's got a tax / tariff in it might have to come to the regulated industries committee, too.
I don't know if he would be opposed to that.
No, Mr. Chairman, there's no rule that says that. There is a rule that says about bills having to go to the tax committee.
No, I understand that. Okay, well, it sounds like a marvelous idea that we turn this to Ways and Means and then just research this a little bit more and make a decision later. Are there any other questions that members have? Representative Westrom, those guys from Tracy, okay with this bill that keep calling me about energy?
They are. Actually, the provision that the bill that passed earlier is not in this bill. That's still in conference or in another bill. I don't think they've called the conference committee yet on that.
All right. Sounds like everybody's okay. Yeah. Anybody in the audience that'd like to testify for or against House File 1344? Okay. The chair will renew his motion that House File 1344 be recommended to pass as amended and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Bill is passed, and congratulations, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members.
Members of the committee, we will have a committee next week at least once. We're going to be bringing back the, I don't want to say dead horse, but whatever that bill is on the energy office appointment, whatever, and we're going to work on that and see what we can come up with. The enterprise. We don't want to call it enterprise. We'll call it something else. And then we'll have a little overview of Drive to Excellence in conjunction with that bill. The pension bill got sent to rules by accident, and it's going to have to come to us after that. And then we may have an overview hearing. Representative Krinke and De La Forest, did you guys want, if we're still, we're not adjourned yet, folks. Representative Krinke and De La Forest, did you have an interest in having an overview hearing of local government lobbying? We received the report from the state auditor, and we wouldn't be having that hearing next week, but I was thinking, from now on, we're not meeting at 8:15. It'll be 9 o'clock. And if we have to meet, we're going to meet, you know, a little later and then get our business done. But did we have an interest in hearing that report or not?
Yes.
Okay. I think probably the week after next, we'll have a one-hour hearing on overview of that. So we'll do the Office of Technology bill next week, and then we'll probably have an overview hearing on the receipt of that report. And I don't know that we have anything other than the pension bill that we really have to do. I guess if my bill fails on Friday, we might have to bring the state contracts up at some point, but whatever. Okay, meeting adjourned.